Hello, hello, hello. You have just entered the Kindness Think Tank, and I'm your host, Cole Baker Bagwell. Every week, I'll be sharing stories and having conversations with amazing people from around the world who are all working to bring kindness, yes, kindness, into the forefront of their lives, their communities, and their work with the purpose of elevating the experience that we have in this big world that we share. So now it's time to pop in your earbuds, clear a little space in your mind, and let's go. What is the West Village like right now? Like, are the flowers starting to bloom? Is the sky nice and blue? Tell me about it.
So we have beautiful buds right now. The sun is beautiful. People are happy more than just nature. People are walking around smiling, and you could just feel, smell, and taste spring in the air.
I love that. You know, a year ago to the date, I was in New York and I had my last dinner in New York City. I was actually in Tribeca, and we went in, a couple of girlfriends and myself, and there were only about 10 people in the restaurant, and we could begin to feel that things were going to get kind of weird. So I'm really happy to hear that people are happier and that things are becoming less weird.
No, there's a sense of hope here. And also the West Village never really got, it's hard to explain to people, but the West Village has always been a community and it's always been a neighborhood. And people just became very resilient. We started eating outside when it was cold. People were very respectful when you walked down the street. If there were too many people, you crossed the street. I mean, it was a very different way. More than people imagine New York ever being. It was very fabulous in one sense.
I love that. Well, I'm looking forward to being able to, you know, get the shot in the arm so I can head back up there and be there in person and hopefully before spring is over. So I would like to introduce you now to the listeners of the Kindness Think Tank. So folks, today I am traveling virtually to the West Village of New York to hang out with the fabulous, the spiritual, the very cool Barbara Bijou. She is a personal transformation and vision coach, and she has got quite a story to share and quite a perspective to share as well, not only on kindness, but on the power of people and tapping into the very best version of themselves. So Barbara, thank you for being with me today.
Oh, I am so excited to be with you. It's fabulous and it's perfect.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, we've got sunshine here in North Carolina too, so it does seem like a good day for us to be together. So before we dive into what you do now, let's turn back the wheels of time a little bit and talk about your career prior to this amazing work that you're involved in. Can you help me understand a little bit about your background and what brought you here?
Well, like most people, it hasn't been a straight line. And of course, here we are in Women's History Month, yes, which the feminine way of doing things is not a straight line. It's a spiral. It's an either and. So it's really perfect when I really think about it. I started out studying art history and psychology, wound up in the fashion business, and then I wound up in television and corporate training, and eventually wrote two books on ritual and spirituality. And now I integrate it all together, which is really the beauty of this time, that we can pull things together and it doesn't have to be one or the other. And to me, that's going to be the key to our future, by the way, is how do we integrate spirituality, psychology, business, neuroscience all together and understand that it is a whole, it's holistic. We live in an alive universe. Science tells us that now, so we don't have to make it up and listen just to shamans. And part of that is that we are all connected. And my life really is a testament to that we are all connected. And everything I've ever done, I've learned and integrated, and I learn and I teach. That's kind of my way of doing it.
I think that's really beautiful. And man, that sounds like the perfect balance of learning and teaching. So tell me about, you know, what it was like to be this very spiritual being. I mean, we all are, truth be told, right? But you acknowledged that spiritual side of yourself, perhaps more so than many folks do. What was it like to straddle between spiritual self and corporate self when you were in your previous lives?
Wow. Well, you know, there wasn't any room to bring it out together, because every time I'd mentioned something spiritual, actually, the one question I always got is, oh, do you teach yoga? You know, it's like, and nobody could understand you could be spiritual and not teach yoga. I don't know why that was just something that people connected to. So I was pretty much in the closet. I would have a job during the day. And then as soon as I left, I would be teaching at night or on a weekend. I was also a single mother, so I had to integrate being a parent in the mix of all of this. And, you know, I'd have meditation groups at home, and I'd be teaching about visualization. Eventually, very, very slowly, people started to reach out. And I think I told you this, when I worked for Telepictures, I was working on talk shows at one point, and I remember, you know, the host of the show coming up to me and going, could you do a space clearing? There's a lot of negative energy here. So I said, of course I can. It happened to have been Carney Wilson at the time. So we would go, you know, after everyone was gone, and we'd go into the studio. And this is when you could burn things in, you know, an office building without setting off all the alarms. And we'd be burning sage and we'd be clearing the energy. And I remember also at another point when I was working there, the executive producer used to come up to me and she'd go, oh, you're going to hate the show today, Barbara. It's just not spiritual. You know. So, you know, I mean, I started out, like I said, I wasn't my first theater blessing, I had to sign a, you know, something that's saying I wouldn't tell anybody I was doing it. People were nervous that they were going to be seen as crazy. You know, Barney's never opened a store without doing a blessing of each store with chanting and crystals. But again, this was all undercover for so many years. Now it's like, you know, I'm doing my first theater blessing in a couple of weeks at the Darryl Roth Theater. I've done every show she's ever done, you know, things that have won Tonys and, you know, best directors. And so now I can say I do it, but then I really had to be careful. People thought it was like I was some crazy person going to show up naked burning chickens or something. I don't know what they thought. They didn't understand the concept of spirituality and ritual. They thought it was weird.
What year was that when you were burning sage in the buildings before the fire alarms?
So we were talking about the 90s.
Okay. All right.
You know, and it doesn't feel like it's that long ago, but it was that long ago. You know, the 90s and even the right after 9/11, it opened for a while after 9/11. I remember going to teach, I can't remember where I was. I think it was Lord and Taylor. They had a wellness group that they would do every month. They'd bring in a speaker, and I used to teach for them. But this time, right after 9/11, they said to me, you do anything you want. We don't care. Because people were so hurting, just like now after COVID, they were desperate for connections. I'd be going to offices and the CEO would go, I only have 20 minutes. My kid has a soccer game. I have to go home. When did you ever hear anything like that in corporate America?
Right. Yeah. You know? No, not often enough. That's for sure. What do you think people were afraid of? I mean, because your perspective is so interesting about, you know, how you've always, this has always been who you are, these capabilities and learnings that you have certainly have, you know, continued to become deeper, I would imagine, and further developed, but this has always been Barbara. So what do you think it was that made people back then, if you had to guess, so resistant or afraid of these things that they didn't understand?
You know, unfortunately, I don't think it's changed, but people are always afraid of, quote, the other, anything that doesn't fit into their belief system, their worldview, feels really scary to them. And I think there's a part of them that feels threatened because maybe they're going to have to change and they don't want to, or they don't know how to. You know, people are very comfortable even in discomfort. Mm-hmm. So when you offer a new way of doing it, you know, a lot of times there is resistance. Again, it's how you language it. You know, then there wasn't, you know, we didn't have words like emotional intelligence, which corporate people now can understand. But, right. but emotional intelligence, really, when you talk about meditation and things, is really all works together.
Yep.
They don't understand that a lot of techniques we teach in, quote, emotional intelligence or resiliency go back thousands of years. To well, them, it's like based on science. So, okay, if science says it's true, I'll believe it.
Well, and that's the most interesting part to me, right? Because you know that I've been practicing meditation for 27 years. And, you know, the pillars of emotional intelligence, and you're so right, you know, emotional intelligence is a phrase that corporate America understands, but that wasn't always the case. But now that they do, and you look at that first pillar, self-awareness, self-awareness, you know, it's very easy to now explain, well, through meditation, we connect more deeply with ourselves. We develop more self-awareness. So how can you be emotionally intelligent without really cultivating that first pillar?
Right. You can't.
It leads to all the rest. So you hit this inflection point, right? And maybe it was part you, maybe it was part the world that you were part of, but things started to shift for you. And you were able to then lean in, live into this side of yourself. So what did that mean for you from a happiness standpoint, from, you know, just a lack of complexity standpoint? What did that mean for you?
When I started to be able to, quote, come out of the closet on that level, it freed me up because it takes a lot of energy to kind of fit in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was so concerned in the early days with fitting in and having people approve of me and all of that, that I wasn't being authentic. And when I look back on it, I wasn't being as, I wasn't giving them all of me. So they didn't even get as much of me because I was afraid to be totally authentic. Once I let go of having to have everyone like me and to make everyone believe what I believe, it freed me up to be way better. It freed me up to really be, to step into my power in a different way because it was then an offering. I wasn't trying to convince anybody. And I think that was the big shift for me. So, of course, it made me happier because I had more energy just to be and to connect to people. And then when I started to do that, all of a sudden, even in my most, quote, corporate seminars where I'd be teaching about communication skills, I'd find people were sharing very intimate things that they normally wouldn't share in a corporate seminar. Mm-hmm. And I realized I was giving them permission to be themselves. And I didn't totally understand that in the early days.
So for people who struggle with this now, because many people do, they are one self at home, one self at work. Often those two selves are not aligned. I was guilty of living that in my 20s into my early 30s. And, you know, to your point, man, it was a lot of work. And I felt just an enormous sense of disconnection and disharmony. I felt like a fraud. Actually, back then, right? Because I was trying to be what I thought was quote unquote good and right in the corporate world, what was accepted. Now, that's not the case now. Now I just fly the flag. But there are a lot of people who struggle with this. It's almost like a context switching, you know? Right. And I know the environments are different, the demands are different, all of those things are different. The thinking is sometimes even different. But what would you say to people who are struggling with that right now and trying to figure out, how to really live into the best part of themselves? Like, how can they go about doing that? What's the first step?
Well, the first step that I would say is radical self-care. You have to take care of yourself so that you are strong, you are at your best, you are healthy. Because if you're not, as we all know, then you can become very reactive. And once you become reactive, you can't really show up in your sense of who you are and your authentic power. So take care of yourself. The second thing I would say is don't go from, and not that people are doing it anymore because we're all on Zoom, but you know, in the days when people would wear, you know, very conservative outfits to work, you know, I remember having to teach at Chase once and was told you better show up in a navy blue suit or no one will listen to you, you know. So you don't go from that to, you know, so I think the advice I would give people is don't go from being, quote, one person that everyone is used to seeing to suddenly morphing into this other person. You're not going to go from your blue blazer, you know, to a gypsy outfit with long earrings and tattoos all over when you never had that before, because they'll be kind of shocked and then they'll pay more attention to the outer and not to your message. I think the rule of thumb is the more out there your message is to your audience, the more conservative you want to look so they're not distracted. Yeah. And I think that's, you know, something. I've had people now who will come to me for tarot readings or rituals because they knew me in the corporate world. And they said, well, we know, you know, who you are and we know you're, you know, a normal person. They say that kind of in quotes. So we feel safe, you know, doing this other kind of weird stuff with you because we know you're a normal person. I mean, I've had someone said to me, the reason she picked me as her coach, I mean, this is so crazy, but you'll understand, is because I was wearing a Donna Karan sweater and she could relate to the fact that I liked fashion and I wasn't, you know, just some hippie on an ashram.
Yeah.
So, you know, so again, be who you are, but don't be radically different in the beginning. Or other words, it might be harder for people to hear your message.
Yeah. And that's part of emotional intelligence too, isn't it? Just understanding. Right. I mean, we do relate to people that we, you know, we feel we have something in common with. And then to your point, we are more easily able to absorb different ideas, different messages, if we can just make that initial connection with one another.
And that's the biggest thing. You know, when I was thinking about the whole idea of kindness and happiness and health, it really is about connection. How do we connect to each other? For me, it's obviously how do I connect to something bigger, which is my spirituality part. But then it's how do I really connect to people where they are? Not where I want them to be, but how do I connect to someone where they are right now? And to really do that, you have to be a really good listener. Mm-hmm. And you have to be able to listen for understanding, not listen so that you can immediately jump in and tell them what you think or a rebuttal to what they're saying, but really, really, really listen.
And you're listening not just for words.
Right.
You're listening for the things that are not being said as well, to feel the energy that they own, that they are embodying, that maybe they're not able to convey in words because maybe they just don't know how, or maybe they're just not aware.
Or maybe they're afraid.
Afraid.
Mm-hmm. You know, afraid to tell you how they're really feeling. And in this day and age right now, it's so important to give people permission to have their feelings. I don't mean to be in a therapy session every time you're in a corporate meeting or you're meeting with someone, but people have to be able to express. Otherwise, they're not going to show up. They'll show up in their body, but their energy won't be there. They won't, you know, really be bringing what they need to the table.
I love that point. Barbara, that is so beautiful. I'm so glad you said that. Because I completely, completely agree with you. And I think about, you know, working and going into some of these conference rooms and people are there in body, but that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's about it. And man, we can do better. So I want to switch gears and talk about your work because your work is so fascinating and it's so powerful and it's so important. And it's important, I think, from my perspective, because it really does exemplify kindness because you're really trying to help people access the best part of themselves, like we've mentioned before. Before we get there, I want to get to your take on this. So okay. we've had this really rough year, to say the least. You know, it's been so challenging. It has been unbelievably difficult for people. And it was one of those things that it didn't spare anyone. We were all equal targets. I have also realized, though, like I have this sense that we're at sort of, I describe it as almost like another Renaissance moment, because I think that out of all of this challenge and pain and loss and trauma and fear and uncertainty, I do believe that we are beginning to realize the better parts of ourselves that we had neglected prior. And so I'm interested in your take on this, and particularly something that you mentioned about this is the time of the divine feminine.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what I really mean, but first of all, yes, I do believe I am a hopeful person, and I do believe in the best in the human spirit. I think the good news is that we have become more global. We understand that what we are doing is affecting other people. It's infecting the environment. So there's more of a consciousness of that happening. And it gave us a time to really look at what were our priorities in this lockdown. For most people, it was like, God, I want to spend more time with my family. How do I reach out to my friends who are halfway around the world, you know, and what kind of food are we going to cook? So, and how am I going to get exercise? It really was back to basics. The other thing, though, is that we have to understand that as a collective, we are battered. We have gone through not just COVID, we've gone through years and years of watching bullying on the media, of seeing things erupt, seeing kind of the worst of our shadow coming out. So as a culture, not just in the United States, globally, we're battered. Mm-hmm. So as we look at what is going to help us moving forward, when I say the divine feminine, what I mean by that is we have to let our heart guide us. We have to be in compassion, collaboration, connection. And if that is what is going to lead us, then the more masculine qualities, and this is not about gender, the more masculine qualities will take that and create the new structure that we need to manifest the new things in the world. We need both. We need the masculine and the feminine energies, but the feminine is really where those new ideas, where that creativity comes out of. And it is very much the heart intelligence. There's even research now on the intelligence of the brain, although the ancient Egyptians knew this thousands of years ago, because that's the only part of the body they kept. They threw out the head brain, you know, and they kept the heart in a canopic jar because they understood how important that part was. Mm-hmm. So how can we as a society really learn to be led by our heart and then truly partner with that masculine part? Because even in astrology, you know, we're talking the age of Aquarius. That is out of the box, visionary, new ideas. Yet without any structure, it'll be pipe dreams.
Yep.
It won't be a vision, it'll be a dream. So we want to create visionaries now, and we need that balance.
So how do your cross-cultural rituals that you offer people, like, tell us about your work. Tell me about, you know, what sorts of things are you doing with folks? You know, what are you really helping them achieve? And what kinds of people come to you and say, hey, Barbara, I want to work with you because, you know, you wear a Donna Karan sweater. No, because I know. You know, right. You can really help me. Can you kind of take us through, you know, how people find you, firstly, what types of people they are like, and I mean, from a sort of, what are they doing? Are they in the corporate world? Are they, you know, artists?
Right. So I have a lot of entrepreneurs. There are a lot of entrepreneurs who are coming to me, a lot of millennial and Gen X, which I love. Mm-hmm. To me, I love that the younger generation, you know, is more and more open to doing things differently. They truly understand living, you know, in harmony with the planet. They do understand the giving back. And a lot of the women that come to me who are either entrepreneurial or in corporations, you know, were kind of brought up to believe they could have it all and realize, especially during this last pandemic, you know, they really want families. And I'm not saying they all have to have biological families, but, you know, they want more of a balance in their life. They want to bring more spirituality in their life. They want to be guided more by their hearts and to bring things, even if they're in corporations. I have one client who's the CEO of a major energy company, you know, and it's like she's working from home. She has kids. She has a husband, you know, and how do you bring this consciousness, not just into your family, but into your company? How do you build bridges? You know, how do you look at things in a new way? With the lens, as I keep going back to the heart. So even things like taking an ancient ritual, a Native American ritual of a talking stick, where when you used to sit in circle, only the person holding the stick could talk and everyone else had to listen. So how do you translate that into 2021? And how do you translate that into Zoom when the only person who could speak is who has, quote, the mic almost, you know, and I guess Clubhouse is doing that in a way because only the people who are leading the groups are allowed to talk and they will call on different people. Mm-hmm. But how do you bring, you know, a different consciousness and a new vision into things? And that's something that is very exciting to me when I see that. And then when I do things like my Instagram Live, I do every Wednesday on the Joy of Ritual about rituals around the world. I love that I have people from all over the world coming. You know, yesterday I had people from India, from South America, from Paris, from, you know, Malta. So we're getting a much more cross-cultural viewpoint of things. And even things like space clearing, which I talked to you about, I've been doing for over 20 years in, quote, secret. You know, now people understand, especially this is the 1 year anniversary where most people lock down. You need to do a spiritual cleansing of your space. If you're thinking of going back to a physical office, you need to clear out the energy. It's not enough to wash the floors because any anxiety, any concerns, any fear, any thoughts and feelings that people have had get stuck in a place. You know, I can go into quantum physics with you to explain it, but the truth is it gets stuck. You can feel it. You know, you walk into a room and either you're feeling open and happy or you're feeling, something's weird here. Yeah. Even if you're not spiritual, people know that. You walk in where people are upset, you feel upset because of the mirror neurons in our brain. So right now, everyone should be thinking about doing some kind of a space clearing to change the energetic vibration moving forward as we're moving into a new season.
So what do you think it is that people don't understand about energy? Like about this, right? The importance of doing something.
they don't know what energy means. Mm-hmm. I don't think they understand what the word means. I can remember I was working with someone really smart, graduate from Columbia, journalist, really smart woman. And we were talking about grounding, for example. And I said, you need to ground, you know, you're too mental right now. You need to be grounding your energy. Think of like a tree that has real roots. And she was like looking at me kind of funny. And I said, what is going on? She goes, well, I don't know where to buy it. I said, where to buy what? She goes, where do I buy the grounding cord? You know, so and I'm like, this is a smart woman. And wow. I mean, things that you and I take for granted is something that's like another language. So I guess part of our job is how to explain it to people. What does that actually mean? You know, so grounding means that you are not just coming from your head. You're also physically in your body. Otherwise, you're walking down the street and you could get hit by a bike or a car because you're not aware of what's around you. You're not grounded. So maybe we need to do kind of a, you know, spiritual 101 of what all these things mean. No, I really mean it.
I was just thinking that, Barbara. That's why I'm laughing. I literally had the same words at the same time in my brain. This happens sometimes when we talk.
Yeah. So it's language. Again, like I said, when I talk to more corporate people, I could talk to them in more emotional intelligence language, self-aware, self-management, you know, all of these kind of words, empathy. But when you talk in your, quote, spiritual language, you have to make sure people know what you're talking about. Otherwise, there's a separation. It's just like me talking to a tech person. I'm not a techie. And I half the time, I don't know what they're saying. But if they say, okay, you see up on the right corner of your computer, there's a red dot, press it. Then, okay, I understand. But if they're going, you know, really. So yes. It's just how do we translate our language also to people? And I think that would make it easier. Plus, a lot of these things, you need an experience. I think you were the one who told me that you were in a company and you just said to them, why don't we just take a deep breath?
Yeah.
And having the experience of taking a breath, they go, oh, wow, I feel different. Mm-hmm. And then they start to understand what it could potentially mean. So some of these things, so like, how do you explain the color green to someone who's never seen it?
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
So I guess part of our job is to give people, and that's what I love to do, is give people very simple experiences of how things can change and that don't take a long time. It doesn't involve, you know, having to have, you know, burning sage or, you know, having a certain crystal. It just is something very simple you could do yourself. You know, how does lighting a candle, for example? I was on an interview the other day and the woman who is a filmmaker said to me, you know, we met like 8 years ago and we were talking about rituals and you were telling me how important you felt they are. And I didn't quite get it until I got home and I started to think about it. And I said to my son, you know, every night, you know, before dinner, we're going to light a candle and just take a deep breath. And her son is now 8. And she said, he will not have dinner without lighting that candle.
Man, what a great thing to teach a young person.
You know, it's very simple. It's just we're bringing in spirit. Mm-hmm. We're closing the door on our work. It's just like people working from home right now. You have to have a ritual to end your day. Even if you're using your computer later to watch, you know, Hulu or Apple TV or whatever you're doing or, you know, going online, you still have to separate work from your personal life. So just by closing your computer, maybe lighting a candle and saying, work is over, that may be enough to teach the brain that, okay, now we have another part of our life. The rest is going to be fun tonight, not work.
Is there a story that comes to mind for you? Because this work that you're talking about, you know, it's very moving. And I think I've said to you before, it is, you are helping people come back home to themselves. Is there a story, without mentioning names, of course, of any particular individual, is there something that sticks out in your mind as a story that was just really moving for you? Maybe somebody was, you know, on one end of the spectrum and was able to, with your help and the choices that they were making, come back home to themselves and that moment that you kind of realized that.
Yes. And actually, it's a little bit funny. I was just speaking to her the other day. I had a client who came to me because she had a heart attack and her doctor told her she had to learn to meditate. She was running like 100 welfare centers in a big state. She was like a deputy commissioner in government, big job. Mm-hmm. And she came to me really reluctant. She walked in and she goes, don't tell me to put some pyramid on my head. You know, and I was like, no, that wasn't exactly my plan. You know, and we were talking and I was teaching and stuff. She goes, I don't have any time. And I said, how about if I just record something for you and listen on your commute? That's it. You know, you can listen for 10 minutes a day. And she sort of went, rah, 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 right? And she started doing it. And P.S., fast forward, she got more and more into it. She started coming to some of my workshops. And then one day she said to me, they just offered me early retirement. And this is a time when they were really paying people really well to do that. So mm-hmm. she was going to make just about as much money, have great health benefits. There was no reason for her actually not to do it, especially with her heart condition. So she did it. And then she called me up and she goes, could I be your apprentice? And I'm going, what?
Wow.
Now, this is somebody who went literally, you know, walked in huffing and puffing that I was weird and don't make me do any weird things. And the next thing, and I mean, yes, this went on for obviously a while. This, you know, took her, you know, over a year or two, but she totally transformed. And now she teaches breath work. She's just in a whole other place, you know, and she now sends me, she's very involved with the Catholic Church. So now I get a lot of nuns as clients who crack me up that nuns are coming to me to learn meditation, you know, but it just, you know, it was, she was such an epitome of somebody who was in that governmental system and very locked into it, you know, and very masculine in the way she approached everything. And then now she's a whole different person. So she's somebody who really, you know, when I think of a transformation, it's like, wow. And of course, then there are, you know, all the others. I mean, I work with a lot of women now who are having trouble getting pregnant. Mm-hmm. And even some, well, I had one who, again, didn't believe it. She goes, but, you know, I don't really believe this could work, but let's do it because I can't, you know, I've miscarried twice and I really want a kid and blah, 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 blah. I said, okay, take a leap of faith, you know, and I explained why I thought it would help. And P.S., she's pregnant and having a baby in a few months.
Oh my gosh, that's so exciting.
And, you know, and she was a total skeptic. So, you know, the idea here is, as you know, because what you do, the more you can, as you said, come home to yourself, mm-hmm. the more relaxed you can be, the more you have access to the parts of the brain that are creative, the more you have access to that empathy and caring and compassion, things change. People are attracted to you. Your body is healthier. I'm not saying I'm God. I can't say everyone would get pregnant, but even doctors have told me the more relaxed you could be when you're trying to get pregnant, the easier it is.
Yeah.
You know, the more stress you have, the harder it is to get pregnant. So just by doing these rituals, these fertility rituals, and also right now, to me, there's a lot of grief rituals that need to be done that aren't being done. Mm-hmm. People who've not just lost friends and family, but people who've lost jobs and their livelihood and maybe a place where they're living. You have to grieve it.
You do have to grieve it. We have to feel it all the same, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
We have to make space for all of it. So Barbara, man, this work is so good. I am so excited to get on a plane at some point soon.
Oh,
so
come visit.
Oh, I'm going to be there in a hot minute as soon as I get.
Yeah, I've had my vaccinations. I'm good.
Well, lucky you. I am currently in group like Z with the zombies to get mine. And I guess that's a blessing in some ways. You know, but I am on the list, which is great. But I have a couple more questions for you.
Sure. So
you've described all of these beautiful things that happen when people are able to come home to themselves and relax and, you know, the connection and all of these things that happen. As you consider that, and you consider kindness and this big world that we share in this time of the divine feminine that you believe that we are now experiencing, what do you think the greatest possibilities are for the collective, for all of us?
I think, well, for me, when I feel into it, the biggest possibility is that we understand that, you know, as I said before, we are connected and everything we're doing is affecting everybody else. Therefore, there's more possibility to collaborate with people, to mentor, to not be so scared of, you know, I have to win and you have to lose kind of a thing. We can be more gentle. And when we see people who have different thoughts that we do, different customs, different ideas, we can just stop and listen to them. Because as an interfaith minister and a person who's been writing about rituals and studying rituals, when I did the Joy of Ritual and the Joy of Family Rituals, I did a lot of research into people's customs and rituals. And the bottom line, you know what? They're all the same. They all want people to be happy. They all want to help people in transition. They all want to build a stronger community. You know, they want to connect to Mother Earth. We are so similar, yet we do things different. And that's beautiful that we have different ways of doing it. So my wish is that we can embrace that. And, you know, truly, I know it sounds hokey in a way, but in this age of Aquarian, really bring heaven on earth, so to speak, you know, to awaken possibilities and to be the best we possibly could be so that we could live more from love and not fear.
Oh, Barbara, that's beautiful. I don't think it's hokey at all. I think that there is so much promise, opportunity, and, you know, it will come down to the choices that we make with one another. But man, that's a beautiful world to imagine, Barbara. I'm right there with you. I love that.
Oh, good. The more we could all have this vision, you know, they say you have to imagine it before it can actually happen. Yep. So let us, you know, if we all spend 3 to 5 minutes a day just imagining that kind of a world, we're raising our vibration, you know, we're opening our energetic frequency and we're bringing new people and new ideas into our lives.
Yep. No, that's so right. Oh, that's so good. And we're going to talk again another time about quantum physics, just for the people who really still need some language, right? And to connect, because I think it's wonderful to talk with the people who get you. Sometimes I think it's more important to talk with the people who don't, you know, those people who are different from ourselves, because that's the point you made when we started, is that's where you really have the chance to learn the most. So if people want to find fabulous Barbara, how can they do that? What are your preferred ways? If they'd like to learn about your workshops, if they'd like to join your Wednesday night Instagram, Global Fig, how can they find you?
Well, my website is the easiest, barbarabijou.com, and that's B-I-Z as in zebra, I-O-U. So they go to my website. My Instagram is my name, again, Barbara Bijou, and I do it every Wednesday, which I'm really excited about. And after the Instagram Live, I'll put it on my feed as an Instagram TV so people can watch it later as well. And feel free to email me at barbara@barbarabijou.com.
Thank you so much for being here. You are just an absolute delight. You are a bright light in this world. You are sharing kindness through every single thing that you're doing. And thank you for just being you, Barbara. I mean, not just, you're amazing. Thank you for being with you.
I'm honored. Thank you.
I look forward to seeing you soon, lady.
Absolutely.
And that's the end of the show today, everybody. Thank you so much for listening and for lending me your ears. If you've liked what you've heard, please go to wherever you subscribe to your favorite ear listening stuff. Leave me a review. Send me a note. Let me know what you think. If you'd like to connect with me, you can find me on LinkedIn at Cole Baker Bagwell. And if you'd like to learn more about my work and my why and much, much more about kindness, you can visit my website at coolaudrey.com. Before I sign off, let me give a big special thanks to the folks at Sounds Like an Earful for their song Brand New Day that I use for my intro and my outro. Until next time, take good care of yourselves. Take good care of one another, and remember, most of all, everybody, to be kind.